Weighing in on rebuilding the cow herd, plus the latest on JBS plant closures. Crew, let's ranch it up. Good day, everyone, and thanks for riding with us on this all-new episode of the Ranch It Up Radio Show. I'm Jeff Tigger Earhart. A big thank you goes out to our partners for today's episode, the American Gelve Association, Pharmatan by Imogene Ingredients, Jorgensen Land and Cattle, LivestockMarket.com, RanchChannel.com, The Sales Series, Sire Buyer, Superior Livestock, Westway Feed Products, and this fine radio station.
Cattle Battle.
Harold Burtz, the Executive Director of the American Gelve Association, joins us today. Let's talk cowherd numbers. Retaining females, that has been the discussion of the last several years of where we're at with cowherd numbers and how we need to bring these numbers back. And there have been some of us, me included, that have challenged this and said, why? Why do we need to get cow numbers back up when the consumer is still willing to pay the price for beef that they are? In fact, COVID proved that to be an anomaly, that they were willing to pay even a premium for U.S. beef. So why is there so much discussion and so much push that we need to get our cow numbers back up? That's question number one. And then question number two, where is this magic level? What is this level going to be that somebody, somewhere, somehow is going to ring the bell and say, yep, we reached our cow herd number? So I'm just going to turn it over to you, Harold, and educate us.
Yeah, well, I wish I could, but, I think the best lesson I ever learned in economics was when somebody finally told me the cure for high prices is high prices.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
And I think that's exactly, I mean, we all, when things are good, we always want to be bigger. We want to do more. We want to, you know, that's kind of always driven us. And I think that's part of it. But I think utilizing the resources, and we talked earlier about how rainfall and environment's probably slowing this thing down as much as anything. And I think that's accurate. And I think there's a lot of other factors. There's a lot less grass than there used to be. So that's going to limit the amount of numbers. But I think, you know, we've learned a lot about efficiency, and we've learned a lot about making more pounds of meat with less. And I think we've gotten pretty good at that. So I certainly don't think that we're ever going to get back. We're not going to ever break any records of number of cows in this country again, I don't think. On the what is that number, boy, I'd say that's always going to be a moving target based on rainfall and how people's range looks and all those kinds of things. But one thing about us, we're pretty versatile and we're pretty good at what we do. And so these producers out here have really they're putting some pounds and meeting the needs of the consumer. And we've seen that because even though the prices at the grocery store continue to rise, the demand just doesn't seem to, we haven't found the ceiling of that yet. And I hope we don't for a minute, because we're producing a good product. So I think that's the key.
And that's where, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt here, but that's where I'm going is, you know, not taking your foot off the gas. It's about supply and demand, and the consumer has not taken their foot off the gas. Now, for whatever reason, and I'm glad that there are many of them, there is still the strong desire and the strong need to have beef, to have that U.S. protein. And us as cattle producers have tried our darndest to be able to answer the questions that they have and how that has changed over the years. And you mentioned efficiency. Our genetics have gotten better. Our management has gotten better, and it continues to improve. So that's where it just gets me scratching my head of, if it isn't broken, why do we need to fix it? It's working right now. Now, on the flip side of that, I'm going to say I get it, and I understand when we're talking about feedlot placement, and I understand about filling the grind, and I understand about those different sectors or industries, if you will, within the cattle business of how they need to keep going in and how they need to keep their profit margins at a certain level. I understand that, but I'm just taking that 30,000 foot view and I'm looking at it and I'm saying, if it isn't broken, do we need to fix it? Or is it more important for us to be, I'm using the S word, sustainable going forward?
I couldn't agree more. And I think folks have really taken a look at that the last few years, you know, when their resources have been limited. They've really taken a long look at their cows. They've used the tools that are available to kind of analyze, okay, where is my cow herd? Where am I now? And what do I need to do to move me to the next steps to be more profitable? And, you know, that varies ranch to ranch and, you know, what they need, whether they need to, you know, chase a little more maternal, whether they need to put some more terminal, do we need to grow, do we need to have more milk, all of those things. But I think that the tools that we have available to us now with genomics and some of those things to learn more about what we think we're seeing and justify that with what we can prove scientifically, I think that when we throw that together, it's really given the American cattleman a real opportunity to improve and to get better and to ring that bell on multiple levels. And I think they've done that. And, you know, the bulls that our purebred producers in every breed are putting out there are, you know, so good and so able to move the needle that I think commercial producers have a real opportunity to streamline and do things better. And if their range lets them grow, they're going to be able to grow back better. And if it doesn't, they're still going to be able to produce the highest quality protein that there is.
And I think those commercial producers are in a position of the strongest market hold that they've had in a long time. That there is confidence, maybe is the word that I need to use with that market hold that they have, that we really haven't experienced. I can say in confidence, I haven't experienced that in my life, that there's been that kind of market position. There's been too many higher highs and lower lows, and you try to just survive in the middle right there. And I feel like we are finally at a position where we aren't just surviving, that we're actually, things are working and we're thriving and we're able to make those decisions. And the next generation is able to make those decisions. Are we coming back or aren't we coming back? And it's leaving the moms and dads, okay, we need to chuck and jive this way and we got to move, which is why I just keep bringing that question back of, do we really need to build this cow herd? Is a just that 30,000 foot view looking over everything, is that really the best move that we need to do? Because our carcass weights are getting bigger. We're having that market position where we have strength and confidence in it. Finally, where it seems like we've got so many things that are working for us. Like you said, we've got the genomics to choose from. We're better managers. We're more efficient of every way that we're doing it. We're taking advantage of every kind of technology that we have, which causes me just to come back and say, yeah, but. So I don't know, maybe you and I just need to get on the phone, Harold, and talk to some of these economists and just argue with them.
Well, there's you possible. Know, well, as my dad always said, you line up all the economists end to end and you still won't reach a conclusion.
That's exactly right.
But they have an important job that they do for us too. And they, you know, they give us some predictions and some things, but I can't, I mean, I certainly don't disagree with you on, you know, we're just so able to produce better. That it's really changed the landscape. And I'm not sure any of us know exactly how to react to that until we know. But I do think that moving forward, we're gonna, you know, just some of the things out there with red meat yield and just some of those things, I think it's gonna change just a little bit how we look at the cattle. And then I think the one thing that will always remain pretty standard no matter what we do is we really have to figure out how to continue to make those really good cows. And that varies again by region, but certainly those cows that are super efficient and do everything we ask them to do without any problems, those are the ones we're after. And that's the hard part, to create the product that our consumers are willing to pay for and keep ourselves in business with a factory that can do it for a few dollars. That's what helps us survive those ups and downs in the market.
Now, we're going to take a quick break, but Harold, hold tight if you would. I had just another question about what producers are telling you out in cow country. I want to dance with that one just for a little bit. We'll answer that question and get an update on how JBS closed two plants and is fixing to sell a third. You're listening to the Ranch It Up Radio Show, and we'll be right back. Calf prices are good, but want to add another $100 per calf? Here's the solution. Gelvie and Balancer females at an average maternal weaning weight advantage of 22.7 pounds per calf. At a market price of $4.50 a pound on 5-weight steers with a 22.7-pound weaning weight advantage, that's an additional $102.15 per calf. Gelvie and Balancer females, they make it work.
Grass changes, weather changes, and your cattle's nutritional needs change right along with it. But don't let your mineral program fall behind. Synergy with TRT from Westway Feed Products is built for real pasture conditions, helping support consistent intake, improved forage utilization, and more predictable herd performance. It's a smarter liquid mineral solution for beef cattle on pasture. Ask for Synergy with TRT liquid mineral supplement from Westway Feed Products.
RanchChannel.com, your farm and ranch network on demand. Bull sales, Western events, product information, right at your fingertips on the ultimate cowboy-friendly platform. Want to follow up-to-date markets? RanchChannel.com. No need to dig for information on all these different websites. It's all right there on RanchChannel.com. Y'all are loving it now, aren't you?
Welcome back to the Ranch It Up Radio Show. In case you just caught us, we're chatting with Harold Burtz, the executive director of the American Gelvie Association, about rebuilding the nation's cow herd. So we were talking off air a little bit of how this summer you and some of the other staff from the AGA has been out making farm visits, talking to people, seeing producers, individuals that are buying those Gelvie and Balancer bulls, and just going out and visiting with people. And I love that. That's the best way, just to find out information, is drive there and see it and talk to people. And you had mentioned something intriguing to me, and you said even in despite of the lack of rain for so many people in cow country, and we had that against us, and a fair amount of obstacles that are going on, you said that there was a lot of optimism in cow country. You said a lot of individuals looking at expanding. I find that very interesting, along using what I said earlier about sustainability, that there's a lot of people saying this might be a great opportunity for us to take another step and expand our outfit.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it earlier when you talked about bringing the next generation back. Man, that's been really hard for cattle producers for a while. You know, it's such a tight margin business. It's hard to bring the son or the daughter back into the ranch. I think that's one of the most exciting things, is that ranchers have an opportunity to at least consider that, and young people have an opportunity to consider cattle ranching as a career. You know, you and I probably, that would have been a little riskier of an option when we started, but we did it anyway. But I think that's extremely exciting for a lot of these folks, and we've got ranchers that are retiring and turning their cow herds and their range over to the next generation, to maybe not their family, but to the neighbor that has had an opportunity to come back. And I think there'll be some growth there, but I don't know that it'll equate to expansion. I think there'll be some younger folks take over some older ranches that is really going to be a lot of fun, because they're going to bring some new ideas. They're going to bring some willingness to put some of these technologies to work. And I think that optimism, you know, a lot of folks that have been working really hard can kind of see some light now, as you mentioned, and that certainly makes everybody quite a bit happier. And give us a little rain and let the fun begin.
landing the plane on this one. When it comes to rebuilding, it seems that producers are being much more selective on what they retain and why, paying closer attention to genetics and efficiency and profit potential for the duration of that female stay on the ranch. Even salvage value, I think, is coming into consideration more and more. And ultimately, I agree with you, Harold, that we will never be at the numbers and levels we once were. And maybe that's just exactly how it should be. Harold Mertz with the American Galvie Association. We're going to hear more from Harold in the next few weeks about some incredible studies that have been done by the Meat Animal Research Center around Galvie-sired calves and Galvie-influenced females. Very intriguing, to say the least. This one is about real dollars in producers' pockets, so make sure you tune in for that one. Cow Country News, you know, the cow stuff.
This one really blew up cow country. Tyson Foods is restructuring its beef business, announcing plans to close two facilities and look for a buyer for a third. The company will shut down its beef plant in Joslyn, Illinois, and its Case Ready facility in Eagle Mountain, Utah. Tyson also plans to sell its beef facility in Pasco, Washington. Tyson says it will concentrate its beef operations around three main plants in Dakota City, Nebraska, Holcomb, Kansas, and Amarillo, Texas. The company says production from the closed facilities will be shifted to other plants, and Tyson plans to eventually add a second shift in Amarillo as cattle supplies become available. Tyson says the move is a response to the historically tight U.S. cattle supply. Recent USDA inventory numbers show heifer retention remains limited, suggesting the cattle herd isn't rebuilding quickly. The closures are another sign of the pressure facing beef processors as fewer cattle are available and margins remain tight. Tyson says it will help affected employees find jobs at other company facilities, but has not said how many workers will be impacted. The company previously closed its Lexington, Nebraska beef plant in January and reduced Amarillo from two shifts to one. Meanwhile, Cargill and JBS have also closed or repurposed beef facilities as the nation's cattle inventory remains historically tight. Staying on the topic of processing plants, more than 1,700 workers at Cargill's beef plant in Fort Morgan, Colorado, are headed back to work after union members approved a new five-year labor agreement. The deal ends a three-month dispute that kept the plant shut down. Cargill says the facility will restart in phases, with workers returning on different schedules. Employees will first go through training and prepare equipment and production areas. The Teamsters say the full return-to-work process is expected to take about 30 days. Cargill locked out workers May 20th after union members rejected an earlier contract offer. The two sides spent months negotiating wages, benefits, and other issues before reaching the new agreement. Cargill says cattle processing will resume once employees are trained, cattle supplies are available, and the plant is ready. The Fort Morgan plant is a major beef processing facility, and its restart comes as the industry continues to deal with historically tight cattle supplies. And that's a wrap on that part of the news. This is Rebecca Warner, a.k.a. Beck, with the Ranch It Up Radio Show.
Dates to keep in mind: September 2nd and 3rd, Wednesday and Thursday, is Superior Livestock's Labor Day sale. On Monday, September 7th, that's the deadline, the consignment deadline, for Western Video Market's Haythorn Ranch sale. That sale is coming up Tuesday, September 15th, Western Video Market. On Saturday, September 19th, Frelick Legacy Quarter Horses. That sale will be broadcast live on DV Auction. Beck and I will be there, so if you have any questions, please reach out. On Tuesday, September 22nd, Thomas Ranch, hosting their 25th annual online pasture sale. Angus, Charlet, Red Angus, Semi-Cross, Commercial, Heifers and Steers. That's the Thomas Ranch, September 22nd. All the details for those sales and more can be found at ranchchannel.com. Crew, you're listening to the Ranch It Up Radio Show. When we come back, Kirk has the market recap, and we've got lots more of the cow stuff when we return.
I run a 150 cow-calf operation.
2 years ago, Nick Small of Fullerton ran into scours in his cow-calf operation.
I had a big problem with coccidiosis scours, and it went to my whole herd.
The next year, after getting his herd on a dosage of Pharmatan Sweet Chestnut Tannin, how many cases of scours did you have?
Zero. I'm not kidding. I didn't have any.
Learn more at PharmatanUSA.com or call Joe Knopp at 402-340-3323.
This is Jeff Tigger Earhart. Check this out coming in 2026. RanchChannel.com proudly launches the Sales Series, your inside track to the world of livestock and ranching excellence. From elite bulls, heifers, and horses to the land and equipment, products, and programs shaping the future of agriculture, we bring you the stories behind the operations, the vision behind the genetics, and the focus that can elevate your herd. Whether you're building, expanding, or fine-tuning your ranch, dive deeper into the innovations and livestock programs changing the game. The Sales Series, only on RanchChannel.com, where smart ranching starts.
What if your bull selection could help put more money in your pocket? At Jorgensen Land and Cattle, every bull is bred and tested for feed efficiency, a trait that can help you maximize production and profitability. When you lease or buy from Jorgensen Land and Cattle, you'll benefit from superior genetics, proven sire lines, and support from a team with over 60 years of experience. Our breeding program was built to help commercial cattle producers develop better cowherds and stronger feeder calves. Head to JorgensenFarms.com and follow us on Facebook. Jorgensen Land and Cattle, one of the nation's largest seed stock providers.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Ranch It Up radio show. That time in the program, we check in with Kirk Donsbach, StoneX Financial Incorporated, recapping the markets from the previous week. Be patient, everyone. Kirk is fighting the crud. So he's going to try to go through it as best he can.
That is a true story, Tigger, and thank you for having me and all your listeners out there. As of Friday, August 14th, the big news announcement was Tyson Foods closing the Joslyn, Illinois plant, the Eagle Mountain, Utah plant, and they're going to sell the Pasco, Washington plant. Obviously, that's big news and not what anybody in the industry really wants to hear. As for the futures market, September feeder futures closed the week at $3.35. That's down $10.075 on the week, with the CME feeder index down 8.86 at $348.50. That left the basis against August futures at a positive 7.22 and positive 13.50 against September. So very wide basis. October live cattle futures closed the week at 218.77.5. That's down 6.37.5 on the week, with cash trading 225 to 235. So obviously, depending on when you sold in the week, made a big difference. That left the five area weighted average $5.82 lower at 229.40 on a fairly decent test of 9,025 head. The basis against August futures are a positive $5.65. Choice boxes closed at 375.30. That's up 10.94 on the week. So the shining little nugget of news this week. Weekly slaughter was 517,000 head, which is 8,000 head better than last week, but still 19,000 head below the same week last year. We just simply need to kill more cattle. Dressed weights were 3 pounds lower at 885 pounds, which is 18 pounds above last year. The combination of dress weights and weekly slaughter left yearly production up 0.1% at 5.5% less than last year. Fresh beef imports remained at 12%, a very large number. To wrap this up, December corn closed the week at 483.75. That's up 22.25 on the week. The USDA WASDE report was a feature of the week, lowering carryout to 1.65 billion bushels and leaving yield numbers with the potential to decline more on weather. The report was clearly bullish, definitely putting life into the corn market.
Now, I hate to keep you on the phone too much longer. I know you're fighting the crud, but I got to ask this, Kurt, in regards to these two plant closures from JBS and then them pursuing the sale of the third plant in Pasco, Washington, what can that potentially do to the fat cattle market? Because we did see these fats in a week all of a sudden drop off because of that. So kind of long term, what does that do and what kind of pressure does that put on the market?
I think there's several ways to look at it. You kind of mentioned long term, right? So the first perspective is scale of time. Short term, I don't know that it has a big effect to the broader market. There's plenty of hooks available, obviously, to those guys affected, especially in these areas because they're kind of lightly represented by the packers. So it could be a pretty massive shift to these guys that are used to utilizing these closed plants. Still plenty of hooks available. Now, long term, when the cattle inventory starts to swing back up and we get more hooks, I do believe that the day will definitely miss these plants that are closing, and we will likely rue the day that all these plants closed.
Are you ready to spend less days and dollars on feeding cattle and more time letting the cows graze and do the work for you? Who isn't? Hey, I'm Shay Warner, and I host the Casual Cattle Conversations podcast. I recently visited with Chance Tynes from the Noble Research Institute about different practices he puts into place to ensure they can graze as many days of the year as possible, as well as how he prepares and has different supplements and feed on hand for when weather and life happen. Here's a portion of our conversation.
The key to saving money expense in the wintertime feeding is you have to start with your summer grazes first. To extend your grazing, you have to graze fast. You have to let that plant have plenty of time to recover. If you can't let it rest enough, you're probably overstocked.
Ready to tune into the full conversation? Check out the Casual Cattle Conversations podcast on your favorite podcast player as soon as you're done listening to the Ranch It Up radio show.
And now that's going to wrap it up for today. A big thanks goes out to our crew, Harold Burtz with the American Gelby Association, Kirk Donsbach, StoneX Financial Incorporated, Shay Warner with Casual Cattle Conversations, and the boss lady, Rebecca Warner, a.k.a. Beck. A big thank you goes out to our partners, the American Gelby Association, Pharmatan by Imogene Ingredients, Jorgensen Land and Cattle, LivestockMarket.com, RanchChannel.com, The Sales Series, Sire Buyer, Superior Livestock, Westway Feed Products, and this fine radio station. And crew, so glad y'all came with us one more time as we ranch it up. Be sure to follow and like us on Facebook at Ranch It Up Show. Our email is ranchitupshow@gmail.com, and you can call or text 24/7. That phone number is 707-RANCH-20. That's 707-726-2420. Join us again next week where it's always Tigger and Beck approved. Stay ranchy and ranch it up.